Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
What up, though? Shout out to my homeboy Ian Neal in Cardiff for breaking the world's records for the biggest vegetable. Man, I want to tell you something, man. When I do my show in Cardiff, I want you to come backstage and see me because I do vegetation myself, and I want to know your secret so I can show you my vegetables and see if you can grow that into a real big vegetable. So Ian Neal from Cardiff, come see your boy Snoop Dogg. I got two tickets for you when I get to town. You dig?
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Good planets are in the main. Right.
And.
Good morning.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yep.
Cool. Wow. Lots going on, as always. Looking at my Facebook page. Oh, by the way, one of the things I want to do today, we're at 480. Let's just get to 500 on the Facebook, okay? On the likes on the, I ain't no Dick K who goes, yeah, well, I'm over 5,000. Yeah, if I could get to 25,000, I'd probably be there too. So you're going to have to get in line and wait till somebody else drops off.
He's got a little more time on you.
He did,
to make friends.
And he was also on television forever.
So, that helps, yeah.
So let's, I'm more modest. You know, my modest goal is let's get us to 500 by the end of the day. How's that sound? On you go to Facebook, go to the Mike Novak Show, the Mike Novak Show, and like it. And we'll see what happens. It's interesting. Getting online this morning, I saw that my buddy Tom Shepard had posted about this very interesting story going on in the Calumet area. And it's about the nesting bald eagles. Have you seen that, where they were going to put a Southside gun range for the Chicago Police Department?
No, and there were eagles there?
Well, what happened was, it's Water Reclamation District land. So the MWRD decided that it was going to, well, it approved the land for the gun range. Now, this was last month, and it was voted on narrowly, 5-4. In fact, a lot of folks didn't think the vote was going to be that close because it's an area that they're trying. There's some wetlands there. Of course, it's very degraded. There's where they were going to put the gun club, or not gun club, but gun range, is surrounded on three sides by landfill. Now,
yeah.
at one point, however, it was land, and I believe it's smack, if I'm not mistaken, smack in the middle of the Millennium Reserve Calumet region. What happened there was that there was a vote very close, 5-4, and the Water Reclamation District, Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, voted to allow the police gun range. Well, what happens last week is that a reporter from WBEZ, and I'm going to give him credit because I saw the Trib story this morning. I was looking at it, and in the Tribune, of course, they say, radio reporter happened to be, and I'm going, come on, give me a break. You can't even acknowledge that WBEZ exists.
Yeah.
You're the Chicago Tribune. How afraid of WBEZ are you?
It's like a radio reporter.
Radio.
It was in television or newspaper, so it doesn't count.
Well, they would have probably said
this. Sure, totally counts.
They would have said the same thing for television.
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Well.
They would have said, a television reporter.
Well.
You know, give somebody credit.
I mean, kicking their butt since the 1920s.
This is a big story. This is a big story. And I say kudos to the WBEZ reporter was doing an interview, and they're walking by, and they go, wait a second, looks like bald eagles to me. And they check it out, and sure enough, there is a bald eagle nest. And apparently it was on the site of a different nest. And I can't remember what the bird, they took over the nest. So, you know, and bald eagles apparently haven't been in Chicago since, the 1800s.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you don't see them. Like, I get excited when I see a hawk.
Oh, I
know?
Do too.
It's like, oh, look, bird of prey, cool.
Yeah. in my backyard. Oh, and by the way, no, I guess we're streaming. I'm looking at.
I just checked it on my phone. I just got the stream to upload on my cell phone, so I know it's functional. So
okay, good.
I'm glad. Should be fixed this Woo-hoo! Week. Last week we got it fixed, but of course after the show was over when the guys could get in here. So
and Dennis is giving us the thumbs up from the control room here.
Excellent.
We have a new employee here who's watching over us. It's our new guardian angel. So thanks, Dennis. And we are on the stream, huh? It's going out there. All right, good. So anyway, getting back to the bald eagles here. It's interesting because this is a situation where I mentioned that I was reading the Tribune article. One of the things that, and this came out yesterday, it says, and it starts, Andy Grimm wrote this for the Trib. He says, when local naturalists cried out that a proposed police shooting range on the city's southeast side would drive away the great blue herons nesting nearby, their pleas fell on deaf ears. When road crews working near the same site plowed over the only habitat of the moor hen, M-O-O-R, hen, within the city limits earlier this year, even environmental groups didn't notice until it was too late. But in recent weeks, a pair of bald eagles is nesting in the remote former dump site near the Calumet River. And so what it means is, you know, if you're looking at who trumps who, bald eagle trumps.
Eagles high in the popularity
contest. They trump everything.
Well, they're on the quarter and stuff. People like them.
So that's kind of cool that the eagle will trump the police department. You know, and I'm thinking, they trump just about anything in terms of environment.
Yeah.
If you got bald eagles and you're an environmental person and you're trying to win your case, you got bald eagles there, you win. So if I'm...
Well, they were on the endangered species list all those
years,
too.
Well, they were.
They were taken off.
Right. But there's still other laws that might affect it. Let me look here. I'm actually looking at the WBEZ story. It says... though bald eagles were removed from the U.S. endangered and threatened species list in 2007, they're still protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act and the federal Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act. Among other things, the latter law prohibits people from disturbing the birds, which the federal government defines as to agitate or bother a bald or golden eagle to a degree that causes or is likely to cause, based on the best scientific information available, one, injury to an eagle, two, a decrease in its productivity by substantially interfering with normal breeding, feeding, or sheltering behavior, or three, nest abandonment by substantially interfering with normal breeding, feeding, or sheltering behavior. So
it's illegal to annoy an eagle.
That's right. It's illegal to annoy an eagle. I like that. Okay,
thanks.
We'll save that. So
I'm a little conflicted because I mean if they're the gun range, I know I'm not supporting it to be put in the natural, you know, the setting that they want to. But I do want the police department to have one if they need it, you know, because they are the police officers who, mm-hmm. you know, they need to be able to have a place to go and do that because that is their job. So it's like, where are they going to move that to now?
That's a good question. But maybe they need to look someplace else, especially if this is an area.
It doesn't sound like people would want to be there anyway if it's surrounded by garbage. Lord knows what you're breathing in anyway.
The idea, yeah, but that's because it's been trashed for so many years. The whole point is to create open spaces and do some restoration here. And this is near Lake Michigan. There's wetlands there. We live in an area, if you know, Chicago region is a confluence of various ecosystems. And this is it's an area where potentially you could have a lot of that wildlife come back. And it looks like it's already started
with the
eagles.
They've returned.
So
obviously there are fish for them to eat and other things that, again, you come in, you do all these things that they're going to go away again because they won't have enough to eat or they won't have shelter or, again, people don't seem to understand how one little thing upsets the balance of all the others.
And on Friday, Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy said the bird's arrival on the scene may complicate plans for the site. That's an understatement.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we're not going to do anything to jeopardize any sort of environmental issues or any sort of threatened species of birds. So we're working with our state and federal partners to determine whether or not we can, in fact, move in there. So we're looking at alternatives, McCarthy said. We need to evaluate it, then we'll come up with a plan to move forward, but we're not going to hurt the environment.
See, another reason I like the cops.
Okay. If they can find another place for the range,
mm-hmm.
I do too.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, everybody. You know, in a second, we should get Dan, our buddy Dan Costa, who's going to be on the program this morning. He's got, there's a couple reasons I want to talk to him, one of which is He wrote last week about the great herb debate. And for those of you listening on trying to listen online last week, we apologize, but it's on the podcast. You can go back and listen to the podcast. And a wonderful Zan just wrote a wonderful tweet. Speaking of the bald eagle, she says, this is what is called charismatic megafauna.
Me like.
Yes. Charismatic megafauna. Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so, absolutely. The other thing I wanted to mention, because I got an email from Ron Cowgill from Mighty House on Chicago's Progressive Talk, Saturdays from 7 to 10 a.m. And he sent me this link, and you know, Amtrak Tim should be calling us right about now. I'm surprised Amtrak Tim is not around. excuse me. It was a headline in Cranes. Amtrak Chicago, Michigan trains can travel at 110 miles per hour. Amtrak says it's gotten federal approval for its trains in western Michigan and northern Indiana to increase maximum speeds to 110 miles per hour. Basically meaning we have high-speed rail. And, you know, not everywhere. Everywhere.
It's got to start somewhere.
But it's got to start somewhere. It says Amtrak announced Tuesday that the approval it and the Michigan Department of Transportation received comes after the installation and testing of a train control safety system on Amtrak-owned track that runs between Kalamazoo, Michigan and Porter, Indiana. The Wolverine service between Pontiac and Chicago via Detroit and Ann Arbor, and the Blue Water service between Port Huron and Chicago via East Lansing, use the tracks. The Pear Marquette service uses a different route in Michigan to Grand Rapids. More details are expected February 15th. Amtrak plans to extend 110-mile-per-hour service in other parts of Michigan in the coming years. So that's cool. Like that, too. So there we have it. All right.
I have one nagging question, though.
Yeah?
One nagging question. After, you know, the craziness of last weekend, have you picked an herb to back yet?
Interesting you should ask that question. I'm still trying to parlay this into, I don't know, gifts. And
I still want to play the chamomile
somebody,
beer.
Somebody called me out on that on Twitter this week and said, I don't think Novak has committed himself yet to this. And you know what? that person is right. I haven't yet, so I'm still holding. Hey, listen, we got till April 1st.
Okay.
And
well, then I say,
and I got to tell you something. Listening to that debate last week, I might have changed my mind, and I'm not going to tell you to whom Ooh. Or to what, but I thought the debate was very interesting.
You have to have one by March 18th. It's a Sunday. It's right after St. Patrick's Day, lucky day. A week before the vote. I say
you know why
have
it's
to
a
reveal
lucky
yourself no later than March 18th.
That's a pretty good. March? No. I want to do it before March 18th because then it only leaves a couple of weeks for me to stuff the ballot box.
Ah.
All right. So I'm thinking by the end of February.
Okay.
Is when I will make
it's a leap year this too. This
oh, so
too.
I got till
so
the,
you got
I got till the 29th.
It's a leap year this year.
So all right, we'll go to that. Let's get Dan Costa on the phone later in the show. Jack Pizzo, restoration ecologist, and actually Tom Shepard also had a question for him on the Facebook, so we will get to that. Rick DeMaio weather, of course, at the bottom of the hour, all here on the Mike Novak Show. And I know what you're thinking. Speaking of weather, it's been winter in Chicago for about 3 years, and you're ready to garden again. You know what your problem is? You're soft. That's right. Get over yourself. This has been the easiest winter in Chicago since about the Great Fire. Grab a copy of the January-February issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, roll it up, and whoop yourself upside the head. Now do it again. Feel better? This is the time of year that you should be reading an article about creating an indoor container and how to do it right. It's there in Chicagoland Gardening. Or think about planting seeds. That's what Richard Tilley from Wicker Park Garden Club does. In fact, he plants more than 1,000 seeds every year in his basement. How do I know? I've been there, seen it. And then, go figure, he plants them in his yard. That story is in the magazine, too. Of course, there's my column on the inside back page. You want to get tough? Read that column. Then whoop yourself upside the head anyway. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine right now when it can do the most good for 2012. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
If you're looking for some great seeds for the 2012 growing season, how about broccoli calabrese from the D. Landreth Seed Company, along with Brandywine tomatoes, scarlet runner beans, and moon and stars watermelons? Broccoli calabrese is one of the most famous and most beloved heirloom vegetables of all time. This broccoli was brought to the U.S. by Italian immigrants who were emigrating from Italy in the 1880s. The vigorous, disease-resistant, drought-tolerant plant produces large first heads and then many sprouts throughout the rest of the growing season. Compared to the purple sprouting broccoli, which had been the standard American broccoli for more than a century, broccoli calabrese produced a much larger head and larger sprouts. Broccoli is believed to have been developed from a form of European wild cabbage. The heading broccolis are believed to have developed through mutation and human selection over a period of nearly 2,000 years. But it was the Italians who recognized... How about them Italians? Who recognized the potential of broccoli and cultivated for centuries. Order broccoli calabrese today by logging onto LandrethSeeds.com. That's L-A-N-D-R-E-T-H-Seeds.com. Or call 800-654-7545. 2407. They're also on Facebook. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. If you ever have a question or a comment and you want to be part of the action here, 773-763-9278 is the telephone number. And do we have our buddy Dan on the line, Ms. Fry? One second.
No, line one.
Line one. Okay, cool. All right, let's do that. Dan Costa.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
How are you?
Oh, pretty good. And you?
I'm doing all right. What are you thinking of doing on this Sunday, besides talking to me on the radio?
mundane. Cleaning house, laundry, all that fun stuff.
But you're not going to be planting seeds or anything, or trimming your bonsai, or, you know?
Trimming my bonsai, sure.
Always.
Got to have some fun during the day.
That is it, yeah. And actually, that's the reason you're here is because, Dan Costa is a friend of the show, of course. You hear him all the time, but also works at Vern Goer's greenhouse in Hinsdale. And that's his kitty!
Yeah. he wants to share the spotlight.
Kitty!
No, it's saying, feed me. I'm hungry. Breakfast.
You know what? That's my kitty. And if my kitty's listening at home, I just want to say here publicly on the radio, if you're listening, and my cat's name is Lagata, which, of course, in Spanish means the cat.
Uh-huh.
That's how much I'm going to bond with this cat. And my cat, which adopted me and Kathleen, it adopted us. Has an eating disorder. We cannot, that cat, you know, most cats, you put food in their bowl and
they eat it.
Yeah, but a lot of them, they look at it and they go, eh.
They sniff it.
I'll eat it when I get to it, when I feel like it. Our cat's a dog, okay, when it comes to food. Oh, give me food. Oh, please. Oh, I need some more food, please, now. You know? And every time you walk into the kitchen, the darn cat thinks you're going to feed it.
Oh, yeah. No, I had the same situation.
No.
When we still had a cat, it was when anytime we ran the automatic can opener, my mother had one. Anytime that if you opened anything, it didn't matter, a can of pineapple or whatever it is, the second the cat heard that can opener start, in the kitchen, like meow, meow, meow.
So that's where we are with ours, yeah. So is your cat a disordered cat as well, Dan?
Oh, yeah. See, he only has a stomach for people food that I give him little bits of, or cat treats. Cat food is below his dignity.
Now, as gardeners, isn't cat ownership at times problematic?
I'm lucky. I have one that does not eat my houseplants.
There you go.
I'm lucky, too, because our cat does not dig into the potted plants I have. And that's a good thing, because I have 40 of them in the house. That would be a disaster. That's,
I'd hate for him to be chewing on my bonsai.
Yeah, you don't want that either. Especially since you work so hard.
Yeah.
And Dan's job, his main mission in life is to get Mike Novak to become a bonsai freak.
Yes, exactly.
They are beautiful.
Yeah, well, and I have a confession to make, Dan. Last year, I don't think Kathleen told you this. Last year, Kathleen and I had dinner with Dan. It was lovely. We went and visited his backyard, which is like a bonsai forest. So imagine, you know, being in the land of the giants, you tower over everything.
Yeah, it's nice for a short person, you know?
Yeah, it's great. We took a ton of pictures. We took all these pictures, and Kathleen erased them all accidentally.
Oh.
So we have none of those pictures. And Kathleen, sorry, I'm busting you, but I didn't erase them, all right?
Accidents happen.
I know they do.
But that just means you have to go back to Dan's house again, darn it.
I guess so.
Do it all over again.
You know you're invited back this summer.
I know. More bonsai.
And they'll be
fun.
In bloom. Do any of them bloom, Dan?
Yeah, some of them do. Mm-hmm. The azalea blooms, and pretty nicely, and some of the others have flowers of their own kinds.
You know, you should never mention two rules in life. When you're on stage, never compete with an animal act, okay? And second rule, if you're on the radio, never mention kitties. Okay,
because are you getting tweeted about cats?
Right, because that's all anybody's interested
in
now.
People love their kitty cats.
They love their kitty cats.
See, I grew up with dogs and cats. I tend to lean more towards dogs, but I love them both. But mm-hmm. I'm more of a dog person myself.
All right,
I always was too until I got the cat.
By the way, we are on our way up to 500 likes on the Mike Novak Show.
Excellent.
Page. So we got a couple more there, so that's cool. Yeah, we'll do that. Folks, stop tweeting about kitties, all right? Just stop it. Stop it right now. Dan Costa, Vern Goers, you're doing a seminar next week at mm-hmm. Vern Goers, 10 to 11 a.m., about bonsai.
Correct.
You know, I'm actually getting to the point where I'm starting to understand it.
Good.
Maybe not the obsession that you have, but it is a disease. But it's fun and it's interesting. And I've had two bonsai plants, killed them both, but the second one lasted longer than the first one.
So you're getting better at
it. I'm getting better at it. And you told me that the first one was doomed anyway because it was...
Juniper.
Why? Okay, tell folks who give their friends juniper bonsai why they should not do that.
Have you ever seen anybody have a pine tree in their living room or a maple? Same with the juniper. They're the hardy landscape plant. They were evolved over the millennia to live outdoors in our climate where they get the cold, dormant winter time to rest, mm-hmm. to do their winter thing. And when you bring them into your nice warm house, and it's like keeping a person up all night, every night for a week. They get very stressed out. They become very weak. They become affected by any insect that happens to be in the neighborhood. And eventually they just die out because they're not getting their seasons that they are designed to have.
So why do people... sell these things if they're going to... Oh, I know, to make money, right?
Is yeah, that... basically those who have those things...
Silly me.
Know two things about bonsai. It's something in a funny-looking little pot, and it's expensive. So you take a juniper is a real easy plant to deal with. You take it out of the nursery can, you trim it up a little bit. You stick it into a plastic or a ceramic version of a bonsai pot, put some gravel on it, spray glue the gravel down, put it into a box and ship it to somebody real quick before it dies, and you make lots of money off of something that didn't cost you very much.
So
that's
what
their whole thing.
Okay, that's their whole thing. But that being said, you have a lot of bonsai plants that are outdoor plants, mm-hmm. and you don't kill them.
Well, I kill fewer nowadays.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that. See, and I tell people that, too. Everybody who grows plants kills plants. That's the way it goes.
Well,
it's going to happen.
Says they've never done it is a liar.
Yeah.
But mine are all dormant outside right now, sleeping nicely through the winter. The hardiest stuff is in the beds. They're just buried. The pots are buried in mulch out in the back. And the more tender guys like pomegranates and azaleas and Chinese elm and redwoods are in a cold frame that's sunk 2 feet deep into the ground, so that keeps them pretty well insulated but still cold. And sometime around in April when the mulch thaws out, then I'll have a very fun day of hauling them all out.
Oh, and your cat's going to help. Oh, no, I should. See, I can't go down that road. Every time I hear the kitty, see, and then the whole Twitter sphere explodes with kitty stuff references. And I actually just got tweeted. Somebody quoted me. It says, "Everybody who grows plants kills plants." Yes, yes,
of
yes.
Course.
Everybody needs to know that. Right.
I learned that pretty fast myself after the first few houseplants I got after becoming your producer, which, by the way, has been 3 years, I believe, this weekend.
Is it this?
Yeah.
Is it this
February,
weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But I got my first one, and it died within 3 weeks. Second one made it 6 weeks. Again, they started getting more longevity, and now I've had a few that have made it a full year, and they're still going. So can't say I haven't learned something from this show. Kill plants as often anymore.
See, and that's the goal, right, Dan? We just get better. We keep them alive longer.
The one bonsai master from Ohio was asked that one time, and he says, well, I still do kill some bonsai now and then, but I do it with more aplomb.
So what do you hope to teach people? Okay, first of all, if you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show. I've got the information about your talk next week at Vern Goer's. You can also click to the Vern Goer's winter newsletter. It's got information about Valentine's flowers for folks. It's got information about bonsai and what you're going to be doing, and also about houseplants. It's chock full of information for the month.
And if you sign up to receive that on your email, every issue will have a coupon in there, which is exclusive to the newsletter, which is nice.
Yeah, that's great, too. So what I was going to tell people, if you show up, and you should, and it's free, but you just need to register. Give them a hint that you're going to be there.
Yeah.
It's 5620 South Oak in Hinsdale. Or you can write to them at Vern Goer's Greenhouse at gmail.com. I've got that information on my website, so you can go there. What are you going to try to impress upon people in your talk?
Basic care, how to select a proper plant for indoor growing, because that's what you're going to be doing this time of year. How to take care of as far as sunlight, watering, fertilizing, trimming, talking a little bit about wiring, how to shape the trees, pretty much a general overview of information on bonsai, a little bit of history of the activity, and pot selection, just a general thing of introducing bonsai, because many of the people that will be coming to this, I imagine, are people who either have had one of the ones that, you know, the juniper that they've killed, or they just have an interest in bonsai and just want to learn something about it. And so, and then I'll have a question and answer session at the end where anything that we want to talk about, you know, I'll bring it up. Really, probably won't have time for working on any trees. I'd like to be able to do that, but I don't know that we're going to have enough time to really do that sort of thing. But, you know, if somebody has a question about a problem or something, we'll be glad to talk about that as well.
Well, that's what you do when you have Prairie State Bonsai Society meetings, and you guys do those at the Morton Arboretum.
We do those at College of DuPage and Glen Helen is the meetings.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where did I
show at the Morton Arboretum in September this year?
Oh, okay. See,
we've run away from the 97-degree heat of July.
In July, all right, to go in and do bonsai. And I would imagine that, you know, you talk about how it's soothing and rewarding. It's got to be all that. I mean, to be able to watch a plant in miniature. You shape it. This is not, these are not natural shapes. This is,
the shapes are based on natural shapes, but they're created by the person who's raising the tree.
Yeah.
So they are natural shapes in a way, but they're not the shape that the plant itself was intending to grow in.
Yeah. That's just a point I'm making. It's like, it really doesn't have any control over that anymore.
Yeah, somebody told me one time I was watching a demonstration I did, and they said, this is a great hobby for a control freak.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, Dan, but you know, I can.
It should be perfect for you then.
For me, no. Everything in my life is out of control. You make some really good points that I hope people will take a look at that I've popped up on my page this week's show on MikeNovak.net about there are just basic requirements. Water, light, and minerals. And if you understand that the point of bonsai is you severely restrict the roots, and that's going to affect how much water and how many nutrients and how much light it needs. I mean, it all kind of starts from there, doesn't it, Dan?
Yeah, well, the pot does help to dwarf the tree because it is small, so you don't get an extensive root system. But we do have quite a quite a hefty root system on most bonsai. The thing that basically keeps them small is the trimming. It's extremely important to keep the pruning and the pinching done on the trees. Otherwise, they will try to grow to their normal sizes. But, you know, a lot of people think that there's something weird and mysterious and mystical about bonsai. And really, everything that we do in bonsai is things that you would normally do with a potted plant or with a plants in your yard. You know, people say, well, you're trimming them all the time. Doesn't that hurt them? And I say, well, do you ever mow your lawn? Because mowing your lawn is trimming the tops of the foliage off.
That's true.
Do you shear your hedge? What's the difference between shearing a hedge into a cube or trimming a bonsai into a natural shape? You know, this is all normal garden procedure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes, you know, and one of the things you learn about pruning, not so much in bonsai, but in terms of pruning plants in your yard, often it's for their own good.
Yeah. Well, pruning actually stimulates the tree to grow.
Yeah.
The more you trim it, the more it grows.
So bonsai must be, so why don't they take over your house? Because that's the ultimate in, what?
Because you keep them trimmed to size, because so you know you determine how big that plant's going to be, and you basically keep it at that height and width by keeping it trimmed.
You know, your kitty has taken over this show, Dan.
Riley tends to have a lot to say.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I want to again remind people that next Saturday, 10 a.m. at Vern Goer's Greenhouse, 5620 South Oak and Oak Street in Hinsdale. Class is free. Just sign up for it. Go to my website to get all the information. Or you can go to Vern Goer's Greenhouse.com, right?
Mm-hmm. And spell V-E-R-N. G-O-E-R-S.
Great.
Greenhouse.
You wrote to me after the great herb debate last week to comment on, give me some opinion. You said that basil, cilantro, and rosemary are the top-selling herbs at your greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Cilantro is the one that generates the most complaints because it very quickly runs to seed, even as a small plant. And this is what I'm hearing from a lot of folks. Explain what that means.
You get your cute little plant that looks sort of like a parsley. You take it home, put it in a pot to grow it on, and before you know it, a spike comes up in the center of the plant, produces flowers, and then that goes into the seeds, and you no longer are producing all that nice foliage that is the reason that you bought it for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people are not interested in getting coriander seed. So,
yeah, but it's the dual purpose of it. You get coriander as well. I mean, and as I said last week during the debate, it makes it a bit of a flip-flopper, but, you know, that's another thing altogether. But you can't prevent it from going to seed by pinching back?
No, you pinch out that flower stalk, it just throws another one. It will insist on doing it.
And you said of all of them, the least sold is chamomile or chamomile, depending on...
Yeah, we sell very little of it.
Yeah, and why do you think that is?
People don't know what to do with it. Basically, it's, you know, oh, yeah, it's a nice plant for making tea, but that's all they know to do with it, so it just kind of sits there.
It just kind of sits there.
Yeah.
Okay, retweet that, folks. Chamomile, it just kind of sits there.
Sits there on the benches and doesn't go anywhere.
But I found out last week you can use it to control fungus gnats, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it does have other uses, but, you know,
which means,
just knows tea.
But it means it's medicine, basically.
Yeah.
You know? See. But I haven't revealed my choice yet. That will happen soon. Mm-hmm. Dan Costa, and what's the name of your cat again?
Pardon? My cat is Riley.
Riley. Mm-hmm. Dan Costa and Riley, always welcome on the show. Hey, Riley. You there, pal?
How's that for being on cue?
Oh, my goodness.
That kitty cat's got personality.
Riley, next time, call me, Riley. Call me. Skip Dan. Just Don't even bother with him. Just
with
give
all
me
the people tweeting like their best cat stories. I've been trying to post it on Facebook, but my post won't take for whatever. Go to our Facebook show page and tell us your best cat versus plant story.
Okay, cat versus plant story. Yeah,
and maybe the best one will read on the air, and they'll get a little gifty or something.
That sounds good. Go to the Mike Novak Show on
show page
on Facebook, and we're gonna turn this over.
Yeah,
to,
I want to know, did the dear old Tabby eat the ficus and turn somersaults across the kitchen floor? I want to hear it.
And while you're there, like us, so we're headed for 500 today. We're just, it's the Mike Novak Show drive, and we're going to do this. All right, Dan Costa, always a pleasure. Have fun next week. You know, one of these days, I'm actually going to show up at one of those things. And then I'm, going to make you give me the perfect bonsai for my house.
Yeah, I got some nice ones in right now. We got some beautiful stock in.
All right, I might try it again. The third time's a charm, they tell you.
Yeah, you keep up. If you knew how many trees I killed before I got successful.
I don't want to know. All right, Dan, take care. Have a great Sunday.
You too.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's see. Some interesting tweets about cilantro. I'd probably tend to buy cilantro seeds rather than plants. For the reason that it bolts like that. Yeah, it goes right to that. Oh, and by the way, Snappy J Dog posted here. She says, can you pimp my seed swap at some point? Yeah, absolutely. Next Sunday, 2 to 4 p.m., free with a reservation. Let's get the information here. She sent the link to it. Let's see if it pops up here. It's the Forest Park Community Garden 2012 Annual Seed Swap next Sunday, February 19th, from 2 to 4 p.m. in Forest Park. Let's see. It's at St. John Lutheran Church, 305 Circle Avenue in Forest Park. And, again, it's free to those who RSVP by February 17th, $2 at the door without an RSVP ticket. A lot of seed swaps coming up this time of year. If you want to tweet or Facebook, send me some information on that. I'll get as many out on the air as I can. We need to get that information. I don't know if you saw that on Twitter there, Heather, the seed swap information, and we'll get that out. Okay. Did you know that in 2011 – the Care of Trees was recognized for a seventh year as a company that cares. Honor roll recipients are selected for their deep commitment to elevating the quality of the work environment for their employees and the quality of life for people in the broader community. Each of the organizations named to the honor roll sustains a work environment founded on dignity and respect for all employees, develops great leaders, communicates standards of ethics and integrity, and participates in initiatives that support the community, among other outstanding attributes. Employees come first, says Sue Bennett, Director of Marketing for the Care of Trees. We've increased the development opportunities and benefits offering available to employees. We also have a variety of recognition programs to celebrate and encourage employee contributions. All I can say is they're a great company, and I'm glad they're a sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
Did you know that approximately 1,000 trees die in Chicago every year due to neglect?
Compare that to forest trees, which can live for over 100 years. But those trees don't have to contend with pollution, limited space for growth, and other urban pressures. That's why, since 1991, Openlands has worked to train volunteers to become tree keepers. Ordinary people focused on community forestry who plant, maintain, and monitor trees throughout the greater Chicago region. Over the course of 7 3-hour Saturday classes, experts teach tree keepers about biology, physiology, and benefits of trees, soil science, tree identification, mulching, pruning, and planting. How do I know? I am tree keeper number 417, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Spring 2012 Tree Keeper classes will run on Saturdays from March 3rd to April 14th, 2012, at Trumbull Park, 2400 East 105th Street in Chicago, in the South Deering neighborhood. For more information about Tree Keepers or to register for classes, contact Jim DeHorn at 312-863-6259 or log on to openlands.com. Openlands.com. Find Openlands on Facebook, Twitter, and on the web at Openlands. I'm sorry, I said com. I meant org. Sorry, at openlands.org. Okay, let's say it again. Openlands.org. That's an O-R-G. Openlands, enriching our enjoyment of natural spaces since 1963. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Rick DeMaio is on the line. How you doing, Rick?
Good, Mike. Am I at .org, .com, .gov?
I'm just so mad about...
Or .hot.
You're a... I don't know what you are. .web. You know, I don't know what it is.
He's a .com.
He's got a
website.
Yeah, he's a .com. Yeah.
I'm a .com. I want to be a .hot.
A dot hot?
Yeah, H-O-T, hot. He's a hottie.
Okay, fine.
Or as they have in, like, there's a website called Rate My Professor. They put a little pepper next to you, which means you're a hottie. Seriously, that's how you get a lot of girls in your class. You get a pepper next to you. Kind of funny.
And the weather today. Oh, wait, now why? Okay, where's
I don't know. Is it on now?
There it is.
It's a scene in Indiana Jones. Where all the girls are, like, listening to him and ogling him. Is that what you want, Rick? The girls to write, want you on her eyelids?
Right, where she closes her eyes and it goes, you. And while I'm in the middle of talking about barometric pressure, I look over and I blink, and I blink, and I blink.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then she leaves a little apple on my desk at the end, right?
Oh, no, a pepper.
Oh, a pepper, right there, right? Yeah. The dorky kid on his way out of the classroom leaves the apple there.
Probably.
Yeah, something like that. I've seen that movie. I always wanted to be an Indiana Jones type of guy where you're rugged on the weekends, but as you head in the classroom, you're basically the professor, right?
That sounds about right. That works for me.
So, Heather, this will be you and I. We'll just talk for the next 8 minutes.
Mike's reading and tweeting,
you know,
and his fingers are flying.
I'm reading about kitties on Twitter. So.
About kitties on Twitter?
Kitty cats. He's becoming a cat person, Rick.
Oh, God, no.
Crazy cat person, maybe borderline, but definitely becoming a cat person. He has been chosen.
I know.
How are you guys doing today? You seem like you're having a lot of fun.
We are. We always have fun on Sundays. That's what the show is all about.
Yeah, it's all about fun, letting loose, looking out the window on a bright, sunny day, wishing you were inside and not outside.
You know,
this is going to go down as the coldest weekend this winter, Mike.
Oh, it's cold outside.
Oh, it's fine.
It is biting cold outside. I was outside for 5 minutes and my hands could
feel
the
sting. We are so spoiled this winter. We're just spoiled.
Yeah.
I cannot, you know, I'm going to go out there in my shorts after the show just to so I can feel cold for once, okay, in this winter.
You're in your shorts now, and or you're like shorts being, I'm being the ones underneath your your rugged pants.
Whatever it takes. You know, throw the coat off. I'm going to roll. You know, I can't even make snow angels because a lot of it's already melted. That's the other thing is I didn't even have to shovel the walk after this snow. Oh. It pretty much took care of itself the next day.
Yeah, you know, it was amazing because of the fact that we had a dry, sunny day yesterday, probably three-quarters of the snow essentially sublimated or evaporated back into the atmosphere. There was actually more snow across northern Lake and McHenry County with the Arctic front. And then when the lake effect kicked in, it was primarily across, generally, if you want to think about it, from like Navy Pier southward to about East Chicago, and then eastward into Lake County, Indiana, where they got anywhere between 6 and as much as 12 inches in eastern Lake County, but western Lake County only picked up about an inch or so. The lake effect now, as we've talked about before, is very, very fickle, but this was the only major lake effect snow event this winter, and that kind of tells you a lot. This is going down as the fourth warmest so far period of December and January across the entire lower 48, Mike, whereas Alaska's had record cold, and they've had 4 weeks in parts of Eastern Europe, which is really amazing how the pattern has been basically steady state for about 2 months now across the northern hemisphere.
Are you driving in a tunnel or something there, Rick?
Yeah, I'm in my car driving.
Because we lost you for a second.
Oh, yeah. I went around that blind spot right there at the Navy Pier, but I'm back with you now.
There we go.
Hands-free device, of course.
What was that?
Never mind. All right. Oh, so, anyway, yeah, you did send me that information about how... warm it's been. The fourth warmest for the contiguous United States is January 2012.
Yeah, it's actually you can almost look back at December through January being the fourth warmest as well. And it just shows you how varied this pattern has been across the northern hemisphere. Record cold or near record cold in parts of Alaska, snow across parts of Europe, even though. You know, essentially Western Europe, you know, from the UK down to like maybe Spain and France hasn't been too cold, but southern sections of Eastern Europe have just been remarkably cold and snowy over the last month, whereas they actually started out the winter with somewhat of a mild pattern in the month of December. So it's been very, very unusual. Where it's been cold, it's stayed cold, and where it's been warm, it's basically stayed warm.
And when folks talk about one place, we talked a little bit about this last week. One place gets cold and the other place gets warm because of shifting patterns. But overall, when you take the readings across the planet, we have been getting warmer. It has been. It was a warm year.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Without a doubt, the year of 2011 is going to go down as probably the sixth warmest on record, you know, basically over the last 140 years. And granted, the month of December, late December and January is going to probably put a dent in that. But again, long-term speaking, we'll probably remain above average. But still, the variability of climate over the last, you know, 18 months to 2 years has been nothing short of spectacular. And it really makes people, I think, worldwide go, wait a minute, what is really happening, you know, with that weather in the short term when you're able to get these very, very cold and snowy patterns for a long period of time. And it looks like even though we may get a little bit of snow around here on Monday, again, nothing in the way of any long-term colder snow coming at us anytime soon. It's really difficult to get that when you get into the middle of February, Mike.
Yeah, and we're getting to that point where it looks like we might not have a major snow event at all this winter.
Well, yeah, I'm going to stay away from that because it's...
You don't have to go there, but I can go there because I'm not a meteorologist.
But I wouldn't even go there because sometimes you get some of your biggest snowstorms right around the end of February and early March. So
yeah.
We're still a long ways away from getting out of the big snow. The only thing that we do know is that, you know, long-range cold patterns typically don't begin in the middle of February. So I think we're safe to say we're away from that for sure.
Well, one of the guys I'm going to ask about this is sitting in the room with me, and that's Jack Pizzo, an ecology, restoration ecologist. And we saw that they changed the USDA hardiness zone map the other week, and that's some of the stuff I'm going to ask him about. Hello.
I'm here.
Okay. You didn't drive off the road, did you? No. Did you break for a kitty? I don't know what's going on. Or...
No, I'm fine.
You know, one of the things I'm going to ask him is how that affects people in his line of work. And there's a great debate about when they change these maps and what it means to the average gardener, not only the average gardener, but the professional who's out there and has to play by these maps and see what they offer.
You know, and it's interesting, Mike, because one of the things that we're doing right now in a graduate class at NIU is looking at how certain trees are able to come back, particularly across the Southern Rockies. And this paper was just published by the American Association of Geographers. And they're looking at how things are changing across that part of the United States where they are probably more affected by rapid changes in temperature and fluctuations in precipitation as well. So I think that's going to be the main concern, is whether or not there is a total shift or whether or not it's just something that maybe is something that's more related to, you know, human-related changes in the soil and grazing, and also whether or not we could do something to protect some of those trees from getting into a drought situation, or maybe some of the trees across central Colorado, which are clearly been decimated by the beetle. You know, the bark beetle out there, and they're worried about the possibility of a fire after a long-term series of, you know, dry winters and also dry summers. So this paper that's just recently been published really talks a lot about climate variability and also human-induced behaviors, or at least human changes to the environment that could affect the long-term health of species of trees in certain parts of the United States. And really the Southern Rockies is the part that they're really concerned about more than anything.
Well, and there's you've got about a minute left here, or less than that, but also in Alaska, a number of trees that have are suffering damage because of the warmth. So what do we got going on this week?
Gorgeous day today, a lot of sunshine. Snow arrives during the day tomorrow, probably after about the noontime hour, maybe a couple of inches by evening. It clears out for Wednesday, maybe another chance of some wet snow on Thursday. But overall, Mike, next 7 to 10 days, temperatures probably slightly below average and precipitation slightly above average. But still, nothing in the way of any Arctic cold coming at us anytime soon.
Unbelievable. Okay. Yeah. The warm winter continues.
Okay. Talk to you next week.
All right. Take care. That's Rick DeMaio. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com or go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and find the information there. As I said, Jack Pizzo is in the studio, and you never know what's going to happen and what we're going to talk about when he's here. So I hope you stick around for the second hour of the Mike Novak Show.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Yeah. All together now.
Yeah.
Okay. I got a tweet from a friend of mine. It's a friend of a friend of mine. My friend Tom has a cat named Halo, and Halo apparently just wrote to me. Says, "Hi, this is Halo. Tom won't let me have my own account. Thanks to you, he won't let him have his own Twitter account." I told Tom, I said, "If I start getting tweets from Halo, I will unfriend him on Twitter. I will block.
I haven't given my pets or my kid a Facebook or Twitter. Or, yeah, no.
But
no.
Halo wants to know when he gets to date La Gata. So that's I'm telling you, Halo." Nothing's going to happen, okay?
Did you take care of business with La Gata?
Business has been taken care
good
of.
Good for you.
Of course. So.
Well, it doesn't mean they can't be friends.
I suppose. They can hold paws.
Purr at one another.
Yeah, so. Good God.
It's kitty porn.
No.
Meow.
Oh, boy.
You knew it was going to go there.
You know, that's the first thing you have to say when you walk into the studio, Jack.
Sorry. You opened the door. I just walked through it.
I know you do. That's Jack Pizzo, restoration ecologist with Pizzo and Associates. And welcome back to the city.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. What a beautiful new studio.
Yeah, isn't it amazing?
It smells, like brand new carpeting. And,
yeah,
it's got
got that new studio smell.
Right.
Yeah.
New station smell.
Sucking in all those chemicals, baby.
Right. Although your intro has you still talking about the Pulaski address.
I know. Yeah. I haven't had the opportunity to get in and create a new intro yet. It's been, a couple.
Challenging.
Challenging. Yeah, right. Yeah. There we go.
Challenging's a good word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
it all happened with time.
Yeah, we're getting there. You know, it's a little bit at a time here. So what happens in the winter with a guy like you? You're just planning for the year and what you're going to be doing with the restoration?
Well, with Pizzo and Associates, the crews are out, doing clearing of woody brush and, cleaning out the invasive species. When it's dry enough, we'll do fire. At the nursery, they're actually starting to propagate now and bring flats in and getting them germinated. And then our other company, the Native Landscape Contractors, they're off for the winter. And then the consulting company is doing lots of plans and writing ecological plans and doing monitoring reports. So we're keeping busy.
Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to talk about with you, because it's a conversation we had, I forget where we ran into each other a couple of months ago and started talking about what happens when the economy has a downturn. Because I know you don't look at it this way, because it's your business and you've been doing this now for 23 years. But I sense or suspect that some people look at ecological restoration and say, well, that's fine when there's money. But when there's not, that's a fringe thing. That's a grace note. And if we can get around to that, when the economy gets better, we'll do it. So why would that be a bad way of thinking?
Because we haven't stopped growing through the recession. In the last 3 years, we've created...
Well, you say you're talking about the company.
The companies, yeah.
Okay.
And, not the plants.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, yeah.
We're not like bonsai you can keep in the house and just tweak them along all through the winter. We've created 50 full-time jobs in the last 3 years. The reason that is because it's not a fad. It's, sustainability is here to stay. People look at their lawns that require a tremendous amount of input to maintain, especially corporate lawns or open space that's lawn, and look to it being this is a cost-effective way to save money. You can put it back to a natural state. And a lot of places that, subdivisions and places that have natural areas realize that they have to be maintained, and we call it stewardship. So they're stewarded, and they are beautiful at a very low cost, a lot less than maintaining lawn.
And how do you get that message out? I mean, you just like this?
Just
this and just say, you're crazy? I mean, I've been telling people for years about lawns, when in doubt, rip it out.
Right.
That's my slogan. But and a lot of people go, well, no, I can't get rid of my lawn because it's really important. My neighbors will hate me and... I don't want I don't want those weeds in there. That crazy prairie stuff. Come on.
Start calling you a bunny hugger and a tree lover, or a tree bunny lover or whatever. But you end up with people looking at you with their head cocked, like seriously, why'd you do that?
Less so. And that being said, that's the old way of thinking.
It's the old way. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the new way of horticulture is working with the environment rather than against it. Rather than trying to force Mother Nature to fit into your model, you work within hers because she wins. She's always on. She's there 24/7, and when you do something wrong, she'll hammer on you. and then hammer on you again just to make sure that you get the lesson. But a lot of people don't.
Give me an example. And by the way, anybody listening wants to get into this conversation. And even if you just have questions about how to go about, because one of the things I want to talk about a little bit is I know you do a lot of government work, and I'm saying that literally.
Yes.
Because that's part of where the money's coming from compared to the average homeowner who's doing this on a much smaller basis. And but if there is a person out there who's got a couple of acres or an acre or half an acre or
a square foot.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you mentioned that, too. You can start really, really small.
Right.
You can start in my 20 by 30 foot backyard, and I can do stuff.
Yeah.
But I hope they would call us at 773-763-9278 and ask questions. One of the things I did, because you sent me information, you gave me some lists of plants that I put on this week's show. And it's plants for all kinds of different areas, like plants for the water, plants for areas that flood. I mean, this is where you get the average homeowner involved when you speak their language when you say, "Hey, is your backyard flooding?"
Yeah.
Here's one way to deal with it, which doesn't mean drainage tiles and channel everything away, because you can get in trouble for that.
I mean, you'll run afoul of rules and regulations. What's interesting, we can speak to the homeowner, and we're talking with a landscape designer that works out in the western suburbs, and she brought us in on our project for an area that floods. It's right next to the DuPage River, and the river routinely comes out of its banks into the backyard, and everything they planted there died. So she heard me talk, and I literally said, "Well, of course, what you need is a wooded wetland, palette of plants that will live under, periodic inundation, and that's going to be installed this spring." The idea of square foot, what can you do? It's changing out one plant for another will make a world of difference. You read Doug Tomey's book,
yeah,
and
for folks who don't know, it's called "Bringing Nature Home."
Right.
What's the subtitle? How wildlife? I'll find it.
Yeah, we'll find it. But like the burning bush, which is a Asian native. Everybody likes it. It turns bright red in the fall. But what they don't realize is that the fruit that it sets, the birds eat, and then they fly down south and they pass the seed, and then it starts growing out in the natural areas, and local governments and the federal government have to pay to get rid of it because it's an invasive species. Also, nothing eats it, so you find no holes in the leaves. The native insects haven't evolved with this plant, so they don't have any ways to deal with the plant's defensive chemicals. You switch that out for a black haw viburnum, which is a native shrub. You still get that same bright red fall color, but you also get white flowers in the spring. And all the pollinator insects use those flowers. You'll see insects eating the leaves, and there's really small amounts of damage done. But then those insects are being fed on by the birds. Mm-hmm. So then you get this whole, plants there. The animals start showing up, and at all levels, all the way up to the big things that eat the little things that are on the leaves.
And that's one of the wonderful things. And I found it's Bringing Nature Home, How You Can Sustain Wildlife with Native Plants. And one of the things that Doug opened my eyes to when he wrote that book is our insect populations and our insect biomass. And when you have a plant like a burning bush, and people are still amazed, they'll think, well, how harmful can a burning bush be? It's pretty. It looks good. It's kind of a useless plant, actually, except for some red color in the fall.
Right.
But folks go, well, I don't understand how that's a problem. Well, you just explained how it's a problem.
And what I say to them is that, we don't have to rip out all the burning bushes in the landscape. That's not professing a, kill it all and replace it. It's that when you do a new landscape or when you have to replace something, replace it with a native plant. The difference between, putting out an Asian perennial or a European perennial out in the landscape and putting in something like the butterfly weed, which is orange, and pale purple coneflower, which is purple, which flowered basically about the same time. You're providing pollinator habitat. You're providing insect habitat with the things that eat the leaves. Plus, you're getting purple and orange blooms at the same time.
And that's one of the things that Doug points out and that I point out when I do my talks is what happens when we lose when we plant a burning bush and our native insect population doesn't even recognize it as food.
Right.
You know, we get the idea that, well, an insect can eat anything. It's just looking for a leaf, and if it has a leaf, it's fine. But they have developed over millennia. Their bodies have certain chemicals in them and are able to deal with certain chemical formulas.
Right.
And the burning bush came from China, and now they don't recognize – they could be on a leaf, not recognize it as food. To them, it's not food.
It's the same thing as an artificial tree and, you know – a Christmas tree. I mean, it's to them, it's just not. It's not food. It's not available to them. And burning bush is a good plant in its native habitat in Korea, China, you know, Eastern Asia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great plant. Our black haw viburnum over there is a weed. So it's not like we're saying that.
So we're doing it to them too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
good.
Oh yeah, they've got it. When I was in Sicily in 19.
Wait, over here, Heather's looking at me like, "Are you crazy?"
I'm laughing. It's all about balance.
It is. Yeah. There you go.
And
yin and yang.
Yep.
Yeah. Because I think sometimes we feel like, well, why does China keep sending those plants over here? Well, guess what? We're sending them over there too.
We sent stuff over there too. Yeah. The Europe's dealing with the. Prickly pear cactus. When I was in Italy visiting my relatives in '99, and landed in the Palermo airport, and drove off out through the grounds, and they had little blue stem over there. It looked like little blue stem, and it was a weed. And the eucalyptus trees were just taking over parts of the island. There were forest fires of eucalyptus trees out there when I was there in '99. So people have moved plants around. Historically, but what's happening now in the last 100 and some odd years is that we're moving them at a faster pace than the ecosystems can handle the change, and it's causing a collapse.
Well, that's a really good point because what it's made me wonder. Okay, I want to get to that. Let's not lose that because I'm a highly distractible guy, and I want to get back to the original point, which is the insect biomass. But then I want to get to the idea of our planet and having to deal with plants from all over the world in every part of the world now,
right.
Okay, how that, you know, our transportation and everything we've done has changed that equation. Back to the insects, though. When people ask, well, why should I put in a native plant and not a burning bush? We get back to that whole insect thing, which is you put in the black haw viburnum, as you said, mm-hmm. It attracts certain insects. Those insects now come and they feed and they multiply. And it's almost, there's an irony here because 100 years ago, the whole idea of the horticultural industry, the garden centers, was to sell you plants that always look perfect.
Right.
We didn't want insects eating
right.
them. Now we're beginning to realize that's a good thing.
It is good, yeah.
Because if insects are eating, it means the insects are surviving. And they're reproducing. And why is that a good thing? Well, think of birds, think of mammals, think of human beings and that whole food chain.
Yeah.
But if we begin to populate our landscapes with plants that those insects cannot feed on, we lose the insects. They either die off or they go someplace
else. And then you're talking about the pollinators that actually pollinate human agricultural crops. I mean, with it's estimated, and I can't remember where I saw this, but it was some high number, like 20-30% of the agricultural horticultural crops are actually pollinated by native pollinators. That it's not just the honeybees that they're moving around; they're actually native pollinators in the local ecosystem that come out there and feed and actually do the pollination.
And we might lose those as well.
And you'd lose those as well. And so that would be a direct agricultural impact and a monetary impact. They would have to do more bees, or we would have less edible apples, pears, whatever. You know, almonds. So it's important that we have those native populations around. But to give you an idea of when we're talking about feeding of insects, Doug estimated that when he was out studying the plants in the wild, and even in the landscape, that there was maybe, 4 to 5% of the leaf was damaged, and that it rarely, if ever, rose above 4 to 5%, which really people might think, well, 5%, I can see that. Joan Nassauer, professor of landscape architecture at the University of Michigan, did a study where she had leaves that were eaten and quantified the percentages and just, put the leaves out in front of people and said, at what point would you recommend treating? It's 1%, 2%, 3%. Most people came to the conclusion, or the study came to the conclusion, that people were willing to accept up to 10% leaf damage before they would recommend treating.
Mm-hmm.
So with the native insects around eating only 5%, it would never rise to the level of aesthetic injury, which is part of integrated pest management, IPM.
Right. And it's something you try to teach people. It's like, if you got a hole in your leaf, that's not a huge deal.
And
most of us, I think reasonable gardeners look at a hole in a hosta leaf and go, it's part of the deal. It's going to happen. Last year, I lost my hostas to the hailstorm that wiped out the Garfield Park conservatory roof. I was in that ground zero, as Rick DeMaio told me, for that storm. You're right. It rarely gets to the point where you really need to do that sort of treatment.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't rise to the level of aesthetic injury, and then that requires treatment.
That's Jack Pizzo from Pizzo & Associates. Restoration ecologist, and I welcome anybody to jump in the conversation here at 773-763-9278. If you don't, that's okay too, because
we'll talk.
We got lots to talk about. I need to break here, but when we come back, I want to get to that thing that we started to talk about, and that is plants that go migrate all around the planet. What it does. Those invasives here, not even invasives, plants that are just
didn't evolve here.
Didn't evolve. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Didn't evolve here, and what that means to us. We will do that in just a sec.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Well, we had snow on the ground again this week. Wow. Who'd have thunk that would be special in Chicago in winter? Regardless, what better time to pick up a seed catalog and plan your 2012 garden? And what better catalog to pick up than the one from the D. Landreth Seed Company? This historic company has been around almost as long as the United States. George Washington bought seeds from D. Landreth. I cannot tell a lie, especially so close to his birthday. So can you. I mean, buy seeds from D. Landreth. Their beautiful 2012 catalog is out, and you're going to want a copy for yourself. Even if you don't like to garden, the catalog is a work of art that you will be proud to own, with more than 100 pages of seeds, roots, tubers, garden history, 19th and 20th century horticultural art, and 450 photographs. Landreth has specialized collections for gardeners with limited space, gardeners wishing to celebrate their African-American heritage, and gardeners wishing to introduce children to the fine art and craft of gardening. Best of all, it's just $5. And that includes shipping and handling. Log on to LandrethSeeds.com. Find them on Facebook or call 800-654-2407. 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784. Tell them Mike sent you.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847--847-
847-454-9081 or go to GotFoamInsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to GotFoamInsulation.com.
I'm passing sleeping cities, fading by degrees, not believing all I see to be so. I'm flying over backyards, country homes and ranches, watching life between the branches below.
Everything relates to things we talk about, even Tom Petty. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're having a conversation with Jack Pizzo here, ecological restorationist from Pizzo and Associates, about what in the world's going on with our native landscapes and how do we get them back. I mean, there's some great efforts out there to do that, like Madewin that we've talked about. You mentioned and Madewin and Openlands Lakeshore Preserve, part of Openlands, who have become advertisers on the show, and I appreciate that because they're doing great stuff. What kind of large scale projects are you working on?
We manage the natural areas for the Chicago Park District. So all of their naturalized landscapes.
That's pretty big.
It's very big. Very demanding client. They have some really great spaces that people in all different walks of life and different backgrounds interact in these landscapes. And it's really interesting to see how everyone uses it. It was eye-opening. I mean, I've seen people out in nature my entire life, but coming into the city to do these work on these parks, it's just really neat to see the way people used it and the great questions we got while doing the work. Why are you doing that? Why is this plant bad? Why aren't you guys out there burning this stuff? We need to burn more. Why are you killing the trees? Why are you? They're just great questions, and it's really neat from the Northerly Island all the way up to the Loyola Beach, down to almost the Indiana border. All the big parks like Garfield and Jackson, and it's really great to see the work they've done in the past, and how we're part of the helping them manage that for the future.
That's amazing. And one of them, places that is near where I live, is Humboldt Park, which in the last few years has just been transformed.
Yeah.
You look at what was there before, and it was kind of lawn and stripped bare and junk, and now the rivers are being recreated and mm-hmm. the natives are being brought in there, and you don't really even recognize it compared to what it used to be.
It's come around. And, there was a study that showed that, once you tear all the shrubs out and you make the park like lollipop trees and mowed lawn, that there's nothing inviting there to bring people in. So only people who want to be out in the middle of a space that where nobody really can see them, or they can see very quickly anybody approaching them, that made people feel less comfortable with what was going on in some of these urban parks. So now when you put back something that's really interesting to look at, like the beautiful trees and the shrubs and the perennials and all the gorgeous plantings, people are in there constantly. And now these parks are alive. People are walking through them. And this isn't just the Chicago Park District. These are all the parks that get tremendous users, and crime will drop in a park that's heavily used because nobody can go in there and do something that they can't be seen. So there's a benefit to society by having beautiful spaces that mm-hmm. are highly used, in addition to the ecological benefit.
Well, what kind of problems are there different problems that you encounter in the city versus out in suburban and exurban areas?
The problems are all the same. The only challenge that we have in the city is the litter is just a little bit more than in a suburban park. The people are using it seems using it in a similar manner. They have the same questions and concerns. You know, there are a lot of people that are very interested and involved in like the volunteers, and then you have just the casual user, or you have the tourist. I can tell you how many tourists we talked to. They were just like, God, this city is beautiful. It's green. It's, you know, and that, not just Chicago parks again, all the parks that I've been to. You know, we always encounter people because they look at us and they say, what are you guys doing? Because you're not mowing lawns and you're not, you know, picking up trash. You're out there doing something and we want to know what it is.
That's got to be interesting, that opportunity for you to educate people. I just had a tweet here. I loved my burning, before enlightenment, I loved my burning bush. I didn't know any better. We have to be better educators. Get big box involved is the question. Do you know? And
yeah.
And that person's right, because you go to the big box stores, the burning bushes are still there.
Yeah.
All the same olds are in the big box stores.
This all comes from the consumer. If the consumer wants to consume the burning bush, and we'll use that as the poster child.
It's become the poster child today. That's okay.
Right, or buckthorn or whatever the case.
Well, that wouldn't be buckthorn because nobody sells seed, but that's the difference. Yeah. Nobody's selling buckthorn, but people are still selling burning bush, and they're still selling butterfly bush, okay, yeah. Which in Illinois is not invasive, but in some states it is.
Oh, my God, go to Washington, D.C., and it's all over the place out there.
Right. Or Washington State. They're banning it in Washington State. Yeah, New Zealand has banned burning bush.
You should see it in London. I just came back.
Not burning
from
bush,
London.
But butterfly bush.
Butterfly bush, right.
Buddleia.
Yeah, in London, it was like it grew in every crack in the sidewalk.
I know. Yeah, that's when I first became aware of it. I went to London in 98 and saw it growing everywhere.
Yeah.
Just.
That's the definition of invasive. So what we have, you know, we just look at it and realize that these plants will jump out of their nice little garden planting.
That's going to launch us actually into that conversation we wanted to have. But before we do that, I want to take a phone call here. Let's go to line one and bring in Chris. Chris, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. I just heard a bell ring. I wasn't sure if that was me.
Ding!
Yes,
that's you.
That's me. Okay, great. That brings that. You know, you mentioned about the buckthorn, and I'm very fond of the Cook County Forest Preserve, since I have to live across the street from one, the Deer Grove Forest Preserve. And my question is, and I'm not sure if you're dealing with the Cook County Forest Preserve or not, but one, why did they let the forest go to hell the way they did? Get so overrun. Where in the world did buckthorn come from, and why is it flourishing up in here?
Those are really good questions, Chris.
All right, so yes, we do a lot of work for the Cook County Forest Preserve, and buckthorn is one of the things that we get tasked with working on eradicating in certain preserves. Why did buckthorn take over? It was one of those plants that people looked at and said, whoa, there's just a few. Well, it's a prolific seed producer, and a few became a lot very quickly. Then there was the effort to start removing some of it. Then there was a political backlash because we were cutting down trees. And so what really has allowed the restoration to move forward fast is educating the public and letting them know that this plant that they're looking at is bad, that it is literally sand in the gearbox of transmission. It'll just cause that thing to grind to a halt, and because buckthorn doesn't feed anything and it shades everything out. It came from China.
Aha, see?
Yeah, right.
Once again, ha ha.
Well, it's
what? Okay, we've already sent them. What did we send them before? We sent them the the viburnum, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Black Hall viburnum.
There's plants that they.
What else can
over.
We send them?
Right. I mean, it's been agriculture and industry that have moved plants back and forth, and you end up with a. You know, some of them jump out. Some of them will sit around and do nothing, and you'll have them in your garden like hosta. Where has anybody ever seen hosta become invasive?
I use the example of peony.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to have peonies taking over your yard.
Right. They just grow in a clump. And,
yeah.
And do you ever see them produce seeds and the hosta? And if the seeds are produced, are they viable? But, yeah, it's what you can do is get involved with the volunteers at the Forest Preserve.
Familiar with them, and I see them out there. But unfortunately, you know, they you know, I don't know how many, you know, let's say, just looking at Deer Grove West, for example, I think it's like 100-plus acres, and they have maybe 20 volunteers who are out there twice a month, you know, for 2 or 3 hours. I mean, you know, how much can they do? You know, they work on postage size, you know, areas like maybe, you know, 20 by 30 feet, you know, and clear that. But it's like, you know, so sort of trying to empty the sea with a, you know, with a small bucket.
Well, okay, so here's what they're probably doing, and I'm not familiar with that specific preserve in terms of what kind of ecosystems they're working on saving there. But what they might be doing is holding back the buckthorn from invading high-quality areas until the forest preserve can come in there with their own crews or contractors and do the hard work, you know, full on, full bore, get the big stuff gone, so then the volunteers can go after it. I can tell you, I'm still a volunteer with the Cook County Forest Preserve, even though I'm a contractor. Wolf Road Prairie, which is at Wolf Road and 31st Street in Westchester, is where I volunteer, and I can tell you, volunteers can get a lot of stuff done. That place has been managed. I work with the Salt Creek Greenway Association, and we're going out there. We just had a work day and knocked out a whole bunch of buckthorn, and we worked with the professionals from the Department of Natural Resources, the Cook County Forest Preserve, the Illinois Nature Preserves Commission, and some just volunteers from the area. And it does. It believe me, it goes fast. We could always use more volunteers. And I know that there's the park districts all have volunteer organizations, or most of them do, that you can go out there and help. And literally, like I said about earlier, was every square foot counts. If you put a native plant in place of a non-native plant, or you know, you're creating a new garden, you use native plants instead of non-natives, that 1 square foot will matter. And that's, I'm happy if you do 1 square foot. So if we go out and get 3 postage stamps done out in Deer Grove, we're at least holding back the buckthorn there. But I do agree with you. We need to do more, and a lot faster too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if this is a high priority, you know, with the forest preserves. I know that they've been, you know, acquiring land, because land, you know, once you lose the land, it's gone. So I understand that.
Well, you know, the one forest preserve that has not been acquiring land is Cook County, because they haven't had that opportunity in a long time. I think some of the others have managed to. The collar counties have managed to acquire land. But, yeah, it would be nice if Cook County could get some more. Because, as you say, Chris, we're running out of it. We're getting to the point where you won't be able to save it anymore.
They don't make any more land.
That's it. All right, Chris, thanks. Great questions. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number if you want to talk to Jack Pizzo from Pizzo & Associates. That whole buckthorn question is interesting, because, as you mentioned, not only have we been fighting the buckthorn, we've been fighting ignorance. And about 10 years ago, when I was first getting interested in this, there was that whole controversy, and it was only a controversy because basically one columnist at the Sun-Times got a bee in his bonnet and decided that he was going to defend the folks who want to keep their trees, because those darn ecological guys were cutting down trees and taking away their forests, and that's not America. That's right. You know, we have a right to keep our forests if we want.
And they were calling it, the name of the entity is the Forest Preserve, and then they didn't realize that their mission was, you know, to protect and restore the natural areas. Not the Forest Preserve just happens to be a name, because they started with preserving wooded areas.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you look at it, they were called the anti-restorationists. They have legitimate beliefs and claims. I mean, if people, you know, have an issue, we have to address it. And it's always better to engage those people than to push them aside, because they only get louder and louder. And I remember when the prescribed fire law came up, and I went down to Springfield and dealt with the sponsor of the bill and said to him, yes, we want to be regulated. We need to have this legitimized. We also need to have it codified that prescribed fire and fire are part of Illinois' natural history. And one of the anti-restorationists went down and got to speak after me, and her only issue was that there was smoke. Well, we're concerned about smoke. We don't want to smoke people out. And so it was you know, it was just us being down there and saying to the lawmakers that, you know, codify this, put the rules and regulations in place, and we'll get it done and get it done safely. And the whole point that she was going to try to make and had set herself up to that was we were going to be killing trees and animals, and the data is just not on their side.
Yeah, that was the other thing. Yeah, I had somebody write into the show when I was talking about this a number of years ago and said, you're killing wild animals when you do a prescribed burn. So what do you do about that? And you're saying, no, that's not the case.
That's generally not the case. I mean, forest fires and wildfires can cause problems with animal populations. But what we're dealing with in the prescribed fires that are here in the northeastern Illinois area, southern Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, you're not having landscape-scale fires that entrap things. I really haven't seen many animals killed in a prescribed fire. What we do is we might see a loss of a particular animal in that burned area because they don't like burned areas.
Mm-hmm.
But we're never burning 100% of an area. So there's
but,
always
but refuge. Are they just moving out?
They're moving out. They're moving out.
And so, I would imagine that burrowing animals go deeper into their burrow.
Or we're actually burning at a time when most things are inactive.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, you're not burning when animals are active. So the snakes and the turtles are all still underground. But you always leave refuge for them. That's the goal, is that not to burn out, you know, 100% of a given area. And what you do is by burning, you stimulate the herbaceous plant community, so all the flowers and the grasses, which then stimulates the bugs, which then the other things, excuse me, eat. That you end up with a healthy ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And a professor at Northeastern Illinois University, Ron Panzer, did a study and showed that about every 3 years you need to burn the prairies because after 3 years you begin to lose plants that certain insects rely upon. And there are insects that are damaged by fire. Their populations are. But generally, after 3 years, they recover. So you do these rotational burns where you never burn 100% of the site.
We just had a caller who didn't want to identify herself because she wants to actually send this information to, like, her village trustees. She was curious, is there any sort of government publication or something about buckthorn or about non-invasives or invasive?
Well, is she having specifically buckthorn?
Yeah, buckthorn is what she asked about.
Because
that you could send to, you know, the higher-ups that would carry a little weight for them to go, oh, maybe we shouldn't have this.
You know, I know you're going to tell me there's plenty of information out there, Jack,
right.
And we would be happy if she'll write to me, mike@mikenovak.net.
She doesn't have a computer.
Oh, okay.
You do have a physical address, don't you?
I do.
She can send it here to the radio station.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Send it
5475 North Milwaukee, Chicago, Illinois, 60628. Just care of the Mike Novak Show.
Send that to me, and I will make sure you get information that we can send out. And what my point was going to be, in this day and age, I'm actually surprised that any government entity would not have access to this information and wouldn't know it.
They do. They're it's all out there. The challenge, obviously, being a village trustee or a forest preserve commissioner or, you know, a mayor of a town, you there's so many things that you have to do. This is down on the low end of – it's not urgent. It's not public safety related. It's not you know, it's not going to affect the way you deliver the drinking water, get rid of the sewage. But it's something that they're interested in because it affects the aesthetics of areas.
Well, that's another point too. And I talked about this – I don't know if it was last week or the week before. It was when Max Muller was here from Environment Illinois. And I said, in an election year, environment goes straight to the bottom of the list. It just seems that everything else is more important. And like you said, well, we got to deliver the water. Yeah, that's true. And you got to keep things, and clean up and be healthy and do all the things that municipalities do. And somehow the environmental aspect gets thrown into the
government. This is, if that lady will contact us, I go out and speak and bring up a PowerPoint presentation that is mainly photographs. And it's very simple. And I've done this in front of a 100 or more village boards where I can explain to them in very simple terms so that we can get a lot of information to them very quickly with photographs of showing why it's important. And a lot of what we look at or what we present is the effects. So in the end, it's before and after photos. So we can show, here's what the site looked like with buckthorn, mm-hmm. and the low diversity of birds that use it, because everybody loves songbirds. And then you restore it, and you see all the beautiful flowers, and then you say, oh, and by the way, these species, you know, now we're seeing, you know, rose-breasted grosbeaks and cowbirds and things in there that were, or not cowbirds, ovenbirds, that in this savanna now that the buckthorn is gone. And so it's a lot of it has to do with aesthetics too, because this is a way that they can improve an area, make it look good without, you know, without great expense. Not like you're taking all the buckthorn out, put in a lawn, and then it requires mowing every week.
Mm-hmm.
Not
to mention the nitrogen that you're throwing onto a lawn.
Oh yeah,
and if you're using weed and feed, those chemicals as well.
Right, and you can look at the eroding soil. So whether that's on a slope or on a shoreline, these plants have incredibly deep root systems that grow and die and create this web in the soil that holds that soil together. In addition to, you know, being a you know, aesthetically pleasing and low maintenance, they actually can hold a slope in place.
Mm-hmm.
Canada geese hate the native plants because they love the mowed lawn where everybody's you know, they can walk around and see predators. You put in the native plantings, and I'm talking only 15, 18 inches tall, and the geese will disappear because they think predators hide in it. So it solves a lot of problems.
Yes.
We had another comment from a listener. He didn't want to be on air, but he wanted to say, if you are without a computer and you want to submit a complaint or a gripe or find out more, go to the library. And
that's what I was going to suggest,
yeah,
too.
Yes.
But I'll tell you what, Jack.
But the librarians can help you do email if it's not your forte. They can get you on that.
Good point.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, you said she could call you. Give us a number where she can get a hold of you.
You can reach me at area code 815-495-2300. And I'm extension 104.
Number again, 815-495-2300, extension 104.
Yeah, and you know, if you want to go to
and
our
say,
website.
He said he would show up tomorrow with a PowerPoint for me.
Yeah, right, exactly. I'll be
just
happy
say
to
it just
it.
Like that.
I'm actually speaking at the Garfield Farm Museum next Saturday. That's here, I'm going to pull up their website. Garfieldfarm.org?
I'm going to let you pull that up. I'll take care of this, and you get me that information when we get back, okay? That's Jack Pizzo, ecological restorationist.
Landscape architect, too.
And landscape architect. What else? What else am I missing? world changer, because, you know, Jack doesn't want to do anything in a small way. I mean, and he's told me this before. Usually off air, but he says, I'm not interested in small results. I want to change the world. And you know what?
Exactly.
I'm totally with you.
Yep.
I say, let's do it.
Why do anything small?
Why? Doesn't make any point. We will be back to Jack in just a second. Open land sounds like 20,000 acres of Illinois prairie at the Madewin National Tallgrass Prairie on the site of what used to be the Joliet Arsenal. Or the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve, where fragile Lake Michigan ravine ecosystems are being restored. It once was Fort Sheridan. But what about building urban gardens? Tree keepers, I mentioned them last hour. Neighborhood open space planning. These are just some of the ways that Openlands is creating stewards of the urban landscape. And if you're interested in growing food in your neighborhood, now is the time to sign up for the Homegrown Chicago Community Food Garden Network. The four-week training program, which starts on March 24th, teaches community groups how to plan, plant, and maintain green spaces with the goal of producing healthy, organic, local food. Get more information at openlands.org, O-R-G. Become a part of the Openlands community. Find Openlands on Facebook, Twitter, and on the web at openlands.org. I'm a fan of Openlands, and I hope you become one too. Openlands, conserving nature for life.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. It doesn't matter if the season is winter or spring or summer or fall. If you have mature trees in your yard, you just might want to have the Care of Trees phone number handy. They can't restore your power after a big storm, but they do have 24-hour emergency service, and they can take care of your damaged trees. Many people don't understand how dangerous it is to remove or prune storm-damaged trees yourself. You know, the guy up there with the pruning saw in one hand hanging onto the ladder by the other. Don't do that, folks. And if a tree falls on a car, other structures, power lines, or even other trees, it's worse. The Care of Trees offers 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. 394-4220, The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Jesus.
That'll wake you up. Jack Pizzo's in studio. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Again, if you want to get a comment in before the end of the hour, 773-763-9278. I did get an email from Frank. Not about this. Actually, he said I was talking about lettuce, and today I talked about broccoli. Those are commercials, but a great also something that we've talked about on the show, a D. Landreth Seed Company, Frank. You want to go to LandrethSeeds.com, LandrethSeeds.com, and I'll fire that off to you. But just in case anybody else was listening and they're wondering where they can get a hold of those seeds, great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show, and I'm supporting their cause to bring them back from the brink. And they seem to be doing very well, so I'm happy to have them on board. Quickly, because before we wrap this up, I want you to tell me what's new and that really excites you about doing the work you're doing. But I want to get quickly to that question that troubles me, which is when you've got...
You have more than one?
I got lots of questions. We could be here for hours. We've got, you know, burning bushes here from China, and we're sending our plants over there, and some of them are wreaking havoc. You know, we got kudzu, which is going to take over the country in a few days, and on and on and on, the buckthorn and so forth. Where do we get to the point where trying to do the restoration becomes pointless because there's just so much, and that we just have to accommodate it and get used to it and say, this is the new reality for our planet?
No.
Really?
No, I think that that we have an educated public, an educated electorate, that they need to, you know, elect the people that understand that, but also realize that the damage being done is being done with a quality of life. It'll affect the way you know enjoy an open space. It'll also affect the way you eat your food. You know, we have to use more chemicals if the native predatory insects aren't out there eating the bugs on your broccoli. So that's really what, you know, we can look at, and we just have
That's the other thing we got to keep in mind too, is that there are good insects, bad insects, and neutral insects.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like it's not every when you say insect doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. In fact, generally it means it's good.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just in you know, cockroaches are the exception, right? But you know,
emerald ash borer in the United States.
In the United States, it belongs in China.
Yeah.
And that's a point of free trade. The idea of putting in free trade policies it's not free trade. It should be fair trade, and it's not the bunny hugging. You know, I want to make sure, you know, everybody's taken care of. In just this instance, without them treating that lumber before it came over here, like kiln drying it or irradiating or doing something, they allowed a pest that's native to China's ash trees to be released into the United States. Now look at what it's costing all the municipalities, the federal government, the homeowners to remove those trees, those ash trees, native ash trees, that are being killed by a Chinese insect.
Mm-hmm.
And how about the Asian longhorn beetle? Same thing. That we didn't require them when shipping pallets over here to have treated dead wood, rather than shipping over green wood. So, but I'm an optimist, eternal optimist. I live on a farm. I have 40 acres, and I've seen it go from bean field and farmed wetland to an amazing ecosystem that, you know, I have. That right now, tree sparrows and snow buntings and horned larks there, that once was a bean field.
Yet. And I've been there, and the place is fabulous. Yet you have to find a way to live with your neighbors, some of whom use chemicals.
Oh, yeah.
They're farmers. They're Illinois farmers.
I'm surrounded by traditional agriculture.
Let's not say traditional. Let's say, it's what we now call conventional.
Conventional, right.
Yeah,
that's convention.
Know, traditional would take us to something else,
right,
I think.
True. I guess, yeah, there, you know, horses and two-row planters instead of 20-row planters.
Yeah, which nobody wants to go back to, obviously.
Right.
But some people do.
Right. So, In explaining to people what I do and how I do it and why I do it, it's just educating. I have nice pictures that I can show them. I love seeing, Caterpillar down in East Peoria was one of our clients. And we took what was mowed lawn and turned it back into beautiful prairie. And it's on its way to becoming incredible habitat. And that was a cost savings for them, but it was also the doing the right thing. It also meant that people would be able to walk on paths through the prairies going from building to building rather than just across, staying on the roadways that they had there. There was something interesting to look at. So that's part of, it can be part of an employee retention program because people like these natural spaces when they can walk out there during lunch or if they're having to go from building to building, they can go through that rather than staying on a traditional sidewalk or having to walk on the street. And these green spaces are amazing. That thing popped in 2 to 3 years, and birds, grassland nesting birds, are down in there now. I've heard that meadowlarks are using what was once mowed lawn. So I mean, I'm optimistic because I've seen areas that you would have thought were totally nothing could really grow there or use it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also excited. We've been doing some projects on sites that have been remediated. So where the pollutants have been removed, the soil's been restored, and we're in there planting and stewarding them. Some that are on aquatic ecosystems, like down along the Calumet River, the Cal over in Indiana, and then we have some sites that we did out in North Dakota where we restored prairie on top of sites that have been, previously had toxins on it. So I'm excited that we're actually bringing back areas that were, ecologically dead.
Yeah, like lawns.
No, my lawn isn't. I have buffalo grass.
That's true. I have lain on your buffalo grass.
Yes, he did. I'm saying turn around and I see this guy laying in the lawn. I'm like, well.
With a glass of Merlot, I might add.
That's right.
And I want to make sure the folks know that you can go to pizzo.info, pizzo.info, if you want to find out more about Jack and what he's doing. On my website, I put a PDF that Jack sent me with lists of plants that how would they start to use some of those plants?
Right, just where, you pick the dry
one, huh?
Area, just dry area, and you got a dry garden and, or garden space that's dry. You got a list of plants to use.
Or a wet space, or a semi-wet space. Right. I mean, that's the point. You send lists of various things.
Right. And so, you can get these plants at garden centers. You can ask them to carry them. Our nursery does not sell retail, but we do sell to retail outlets. And just tell them that you want these native plants and that that there's a wholesale grower out there that'll do it. And the big boxes are coming around.
And go to the box store and say, I want this prairie plant. I want this native plant.
They'll begin to respond. They're all about making money, which is a good thing. Having a good strong economy. So let's encourage them to do so, but do so with the right thing. Ask for the plants,
mm-hmm.
And if they don't have them, say great. Then if you carry them next year, I'll be happy to come in and buy some.
I've noticed it with the products. Now you can stand in line at the Home Depot, and on your left are all the synthetic chemicals, and on the right are organics. You know, at some point, let's just swap out all the synthetic chemicals and just go with the organics.
And how many years ago was there nothing? There was
right.
Just,
you couldn't
just,
get anything, just, and it's amazing that it's changed.
So it's changed. And it's consumer demand that did it.
Yeah. Jack Pizzo, always a pleasure. I knew that, you know, I just wind you up, turn you loose. And you're always welcome on the show. Heather, before we let Jack out of here, got people to write to the Mike Novak Show. We have kitty tails now.
We do.
I know.
We'll have to go through them and read the best one next Sunday.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah. If we get a good one, I'm not going to read them all. I'm not turning my show
There's
over to cats.
There's some great ones, though. So if you want to go for...
Go to the
Facebook
Mike Novak
page.
Show on Facebook. Like us while you're there. If you hate cats, you can write that up there, too.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Maybe a cat breaking into your garden and destroying something is the reason you hate cats. We want to hear about it. You know,
it
garden,
might be.
Cat versus plant tales. That's what I want to hear. Yeah.
All right. So that's it for today. We'll see you next week. And as we always say, go green or
go home.